Well, good morning. What I'd like to start with is just say a few words around meditation practice and then have us sit. What I'm going to be going into today is how to really include, you know, thoughts and emotions into your meditation practice. So, I realize that many of you already have meditation practices and probably been meditating for some time. And one of the reasons why I wrote Unlearning Meditation was to present ways of transitioning from more structured types of approaches to meditation to something with less structure. In doing that, you may find that some of what you've been, that's already in your practice may be very useful, and some of the things that are in your practice may have actually led to a certain kind of rigidity or some kinds of, maybe added harshness or pressure or things like that. So the first thing around meditation that I see that's probably important around any orientation to practice, which I think we all really do know in our hearts, is to be very gentle with ourselves, to be just very kind to whatever it is we're experiencing. That if we can take off some of the pressure that we feel when we first sit down to meditate, I would say that our sitting may actually go in a direction of greater ease and gentleness and friendliness towards ourselves. If you do have a meditation practice today, which I assume you do, you're free to do that practice. You don't have to feel as though you must do, you know, something radical and make this some kind of dramatic shift, but rather that you can do your practice, but also consider some of the things that have gone into your practice. And around that is, in this kind of, you know, day of meditation, to to really start to allow thinking, you may need to consider some of the things that you're doing in your meditation practice that have worked for you, which have been ways to get past thinking very quickly, to stop your thinking, and to reconsider that maybe if you allowed your thinking a bit more, felt a bit kinder, more gentler around it, let it go on, that changing that relationship to your thinking may actually lead to your mind calming down. So that's just a proposition for you. And so the beginning instructions that I give to people are to just sit in a comfortable posture, chair, floor, whatever, and bring your attention to touch of your hands, touching, or your feet touching the mat or the floor, or your rear against the cushion. Just some external contact. And allow your thoughts and feelings into your sitting. Allow your attention to go here and there. If you need to come back to something, you need some grounding, you can just bring your attention back to the touch of your hands or your feet touching. If you have a practice of being aware of the breath, you might find that your attention automatically goes back to the breath at times, but just let your... I would suggest, you know, let your attention go to other things in this sitting. Let yourself have just a much broader awareness around your experience. I know many of you have probably also practiced that too. So just to consider that you can let things go on a bit longer than you have before. You can let thoughts and feelings and whatever you're thinking about, your plans, your memories, continue into your sitting. And that you can really be very compassionate to yourself around the fact that you've gotten up this morning, you've come here, you have thoughts, you have conversations, to just have a transition, to let yourself move into this meditative space, rather than having to, you know, close your eyes and suddenly get into some kind of quiet, still spot. So to do this kind of approach, what I really suggest too is, if you need to move during the sitting for comfort, you can, but just move a little and then, you know, go back to a still kind of posture. You can sit with your eyes closed. If you have a practice of sitting with eyes open, that's okay too. The last thing I want to say about this before we begin the sitting is that it's all right to let yourself go towards sleep. Many of us are sleep deprived, and you'll find that meditating, you might find yourself getting relaxed, and if you start to drift towards sleep, that's fine. You don't need to try to wake yourself up or do anything like that in this kind of approach. And then I'll say more about this approach and you know, things regarding awareness of thoughts after the sitting. So if we can, I guess turn off the mic, and we'll just start a sitting for how long? I think we'll do this first one for half an hour. So I'd just like to say a couple of things about recollecting and journaling your meditation sittings that might be of help to you. When you try to recall a meditation sitting, there may only be a few, you know, periods of the sitting that you actually do remember when you come out. So start with what you remember most easily, and from there go to what may be a little bit harder to remember. But you'll probably find that if you start with something that's easy to recall, other things will start to come up around the sitting. And when you write it down, you don't need to write it in chronological order. You can just start with easiest remembered and then what comes next. And you can always put it into chronological order later on if you'd like. And in writing down your meditation sittings, what I suggest is that you try to use your own words. Instead of using terminology, Buddhist terminology or psychological terminology, or any kinds of terms that you've used to kind of categorize or encapsulate your experience, to try to fill out the description a bit. And so this will take some more time, but you might find similes, metaphors, expressions that come to mind may better communicate your experience than some of the terms that you've been using. Now, some of the reason for this is so that you can actually, in a sense, become more familiar with what it is you experience when you meditate. Many times with meditation practice, what happens is we go through a meditation sitting, we get up, and then we go and do something else, and we completely forget whatever happened. And then we sit again, and we go through some of the same things again and again, without really going over, well, what was it like when I was sitting with that anxiety? Or what was it like when I was planning my day? What kinds of experiences did I have when I started to drift off a bit? And so if you recall your sitting afterwards and write it down, you might start to find when you sit again, you're actually more familiar with your mind in meditation. You have a much better sense of the terrain, you know, of your meditation experience. And when you use your own words, what you find is that you're not trying to fit it into some external system. You're not trying to have a Buddhist meditation sitting or a psychological one or something like that. You're actually just talking about what it is you experience, as though you were talking to a friend or writing down in your journal. So it's really much closer to how you would know your experience. You don't have to learn another language to do this. You don't have to be concerned about what words you choose, or even your grammar, you know, mostly because you'll be reading it. So you can just put it together in a way that gives it, for you, a sense of what it's like when you sat to meditate. And that's one of the reasons why this approach that I've been teaching over the years is called recollective awareness. It's about how to develop awareness through recollecting your experience rather than trying to be mindful in the moment. And the main distinction here, and I'll be going into that throughout the day, is that if you're trying to be mindful of your thoughts and feelings in the moment, there's often a way in which you're distancing yourself from the experience, you're stopping the experience, you're interrupting in some way, you're kind of managing what it is you're thinking about or what it is you're feeling. So your awareness of it is coming about through interrupting it, through stopping it and getting some other perspective on it. What I'm suggesting around recollective awareness is that you actually allow it to go on and you have your awareness after the fact. You allow awareness to come in somewhere further down the line in the thinking process and as a technique to recollect after the sitting in a purposeful way will help you, in a sense, be able to also go into your sittings and find that there are these natural points in your meditation sitting where you reflect back on what you just experienced. You're kind of noticing, oh, I was thinking about this person, or I'm, you know, running through a list of things to do. But you're allowing it to go on instead of trying to stop it and separate yourself from the experience. Any questions around that aspect of this? Yes. Thank you so much, Andy. Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. Because when I began giving instruction, I didn't go into permission in a much direct way, more direct way. What I'm looking at here around permission too is that you actually have choice when you sit, and to really consider that. Your meditation practice is really your own. I mean, it's your mind, not somebody else's. So it's not somebody else's choice as to what you should be doing, but how you begin to size things up to start to see the conditions of your state of mind and the kind of choice that you can make at any given time. So that sometimes you find the choice to follow the breath is just quite natural. That's what you're aware of. You're aware of breathing and your attention will go there. Sometimes it's going to be noise or sound or bodily sensations, and other times it might be something that you're thinking about that you're more engaged in. And to feel that you have permission to make choices, because that's really what we really need around our own independent practice. If we're looking externally for the teacher or tradition or somebody to tell us exactly what the right choice is, then we end up struggling in our experience, trying to continually make the right choice, to do the right thing, to have the correct posture or the correct kind of awareness or the correct, and that starts to build up a whole sense of, on the other end, that you have more moments of feeling you're doing it wrong, that your experience isn't the right experience, that things have to change. Instead of, well, how do I stay with what it is I'm experiencing? Isn't that what this really is about? How do I stay with each kind of experience I'm having? And for much of your time in meditation, whatever practice you're doing, a high percentage of your experience is going to be thinking. There's no way to get around it. So the whole direction and focus of today's workshop is going to be, well, how do I orient myself to a practice where I'm going to bring attention to my thinking a bit more? How do I start to bring that more into my meditation practice instead of having a meditation practice which actually cuts off thinking in preference for being with the body or breath or sounds or something like that? And this is a consideration. I'm not going to be saying, you know, don't go to your breath or don't go to your body, but how to be just more inclusive of thinking. And that's going to entail something different than what we've learned as far as awareness of the breath and the body. So I just want to go into a few things about awareness of thoughts. And as you heard, I often will include emotions with thinking. And really, in a certain way, you're not going to find, how do you say, there's going to be a lot of similarity or things that are crossing over between your thinking and your emotions. I know in most meditation practices, people are presented with looking at emotions more in terms of physical sensations, to notice, you know, the sensation of anger or fear or something like that in the body. With awareness of thinking, what you're noticing is emotion within the thoughts themselves. So what you might find is that the emotion in some of your thinking is carried through the tone of voice in the thoughts. And just to consider that, that if you are having thoughts that have a kind of, you know, edge to them of worry, or there's a thinking that seems to be really tense and tight in the expression, or however you start to hear emotions. And that's the thing, is that this whole approach to looking at thoughts is actually requires us to let the thoughts go on so that we can know what it is we're thinking about. And maybe I'll backtrack here around that as well, is my belief around awareness of thinking is that when you have continuous thoughts, you know, narratives, conversations with people, whether they're monologues where you're giving a speech or dialogues where you're talking to somebody, those kinds of thoughts, they have a particular kind of momentum and trajectory. They're actually trying to go somewhere. So that you might find if you try to stop yourself from having a conversation with somebody while you're in your meditation sitting, or a conversation with somebody in your mind, you may find that you keep going back to it. You stop it, and then you start up the conversation again. Or you're having a narrative, you're, you know, delivering a talk, or you're trying to tell somebody something, and you find that you stop those kinds of thoughts, but then a few minutes later or so, there you are again, telling the person something similar. So to consider that, that kind of thinking may need to go on until you get to what it is you may be needing to say. You know, the thinking has a kind of, our thinking, you know, in our ordinary life, you may find that you may need to think something through, have a conversation for a while with somebody, or even with yourself, before you get to, well, what is it that I'm really trying to say here, or what's going on inside of me here, or something like that. So part of this approach is, well, by letting your thinking go on more and more, you're not wasting your time with the thinking. You're actually, in a sense, sitting in a way where you're going to start to know something more about your thinking. So consider it as, instead of, you know, mind wandering or not being mindful, to consider that your actual intent is, well, I'd like to know what is going on in my thoughts. I'd like to really get a sense of the way my thoughts go here and there and what things are there. And so many times within your thinking, like around a conversation with somebody, will have intentions about what you're going to say. So that's a good thing to notice. And what you may find while you're sitting there with some of the intentions as to what to say, you're also considering whether you can say these things. There'll be some things, you know, that you'll find, well, that's too harsh, or that's rude, or that's, you know, unkind. And then you start to find that you're actually starting to consider right speech. Well, what would be the appropriate thing to say here? What can I actually say? And so you might also find, as you follow that process, there are some things that you start to come to as, this is what I can say. This would be better speech. This would be a different way of relating to the person. And so to consider that, observing or getting to know your verbal thoughts around a conversation is actually watching your speech in a way that you can't do often when you're with somebody. When you're with a person, you're probably doing so much of the censoring at the time that you're going away thinking, well, I should have said this, why didn't I say that, you know, the variety of things that happen after a conversation. But here you can, in meditation, actually start to look at, well, what's behind this? You know, what's going on in my need to be able to say this thing to that person? How am I seeing this person? And so what you may find as well is that you have thinking upon thinking. And some people, when they look at this, they would say, well, what am I doing here? I'm just analyzing my thoughts. I'm just kind of starting to think about my thinking. That's just another kind of thinking that we do. So I would suggest you let that go on too. And you might find, if you let these different kind of trains of thought go on, that they do have a way of maybe not ending in a resolution, but they do have a way of maybe petering out, or you seeing something about it and shifting, and that you may find with less struggle or less conflict around thinking, your thinking actually may get less. That may be less of something that really, you know, comes in and distracts you, or, you know, is a nuisance. You might find that actually your thinking may become interesting. And that's another kind of quality that I believe we're really trying to develop within our meditation practice, how to become interested in our experience and to become interested in areas that usually we don't have any interest for. Because I really do believe that in our meditation practice, it's very easy to become indifferent. It's easy to develop a kind of attitude where, you know, the thoughts will just go away if I don't pay any attention to them, and they won't affect me, and nothing will happen out of that, which is, I believe, a kind of indifference. Or to bring your attention to your breath or your body, and that's where my attention should be, and I shouldn't pay attention to anything else. That's actually does lead to a kind of indifference. You may think it leads to more mindfulness or more being present, but I do think it also leads to a real discounting and devaluing of your thoughts and feelings and a lack of interest in them. But this is something you can see for yourself. So in becoming aware of your thinking, we need to start to become interested in it. And when you're interested in something, you're going to find you're less aversive to it. It becomes less of a problem. It becomes something that maybe you can focus on or that holds your attention, rather than something that's getting in the way. So the main thing around this is, well, how do you actually start to feel comfortable sitting and meditating with all kinds of mental chatter and your mind going here and there when you've done practices which have actually helped you stop that chatter and keep you focused on your body or on your breath? And how do you move in that kind of direction? And you can't just do it immediately. It just won't happen in a snap. What would tend to happen is that you may find that there are periods where you are just much more naturally kind of aware of your breath or body, and you're just right there with sounds, and there isn't much thinking, and that's good. So you're just with that kind of awareness. There are other times in your meditation sitting where you might find, okay, I'm thinking about things again. You know, I'm thinking about what I'm going to do later. I'm starting to plan something, or I'm remembering things about yesterday, or I'm having this conversation. And to just see if you can make a choice, you know, just to allow that to be there. Just to let yourself, you know, have those periods in the meditation instead of automatically saying, okay, I need to be with my breath. And that's all I'm asking you to try to do. It's a very simple experiment, you know, so that you become aware that I'm thinking about things, that's what I'll go with. But if I'm aware of my body and breath and sounds, I'll go with that, you know. And if there's both, well, I'll have to make a choice. And to consider today perhaps making other choices than you normally do. Because it's only when you start to make some different choices that you might actually see some things open up around your meditation practice. Always making the same choice around meditation brings us into a kind of rigidity. It gives a sense that we really start to become tight and start to feel as though if we don't make this choice, we're doing something wrong. It's going to be incorrect. So consider today that really you can do all sorts of things. And you can try things out. If you make a wrong choice, well, who's to know? You know, how are you really going to determine that? And that's something that we may talk about later. So I'll just pause here and just open up to any questions you might have. Yes, in the back. Let me just say that there will be times when you'll be caught up in your thinking, and that'll be fine. That you have to get caught up. In order to really be within experience, just like being an experience of your breath, you're absorbed in it. And so we will get caught up in our thinking in this kind of approach. But what I find is that if you let yourself get caught up in it, you might also notice there'll be points where you're less embedded in it, where it's not like you're actually separated from it. It's almost as if you can notice, oh, this is what I'm thinking about, or I'm talking to this person, or I really can't say that, or something like that. That you start to pick up that you can't be kind of fully absorbed in it. You may only be fully absorbed for a little while. Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yes, the whole issue of content. Can we actually know our thinking process without considering the content? You know, and I would say that we really do need to know the content. I mean, when I hear people's reports on meditation and someone says, well, I've been obsessing about something I have to do tomorrow, I have to ask the question, well, what is it? What is it that you have to do? Because the content is part of what's really driving the obsession and how the person is thinking about it. So yes, to pay attention of the to the content as well.
That's the interesting phrase, that's to pay attention to the content.
Mm-hmm.
But I can notice that I can slip over to no longer paying attention. Is there a fine line there when you can work it?
Yes. If I take it you've been meditating, like following the breath or doing some more awareness practices?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Then I would say, it goes back to my book on learning, I always suggest is to let yourself get lost a bit more than you have. Because much of the mindfulness training in meditation has been basically training not to get involved in the content of thoughts, or not to get involved in thoughts, in preference for the breath and developing that focus, because basically that's what we need at the beginning of our practice, you know, or many people may need that kind of new attention on the body. But once you've done that practice and your mind is already trained, I believe you can actually be looser with it around thinking. That you can trust that you will be thinking about certain things, but the breath may not be too far away, and that your attention can come back to the breath. That you'll find that coming back. What it will probably look like in your experience is that you're doing the practice rather, badly, we'll say, or incorrectly, or you're not getting it right. But you might find that in doing so, you're actually sitting with a lot less pressure around the practice that you're doing. And so what may happen is when you are aware of your breath, it's just you notice that you're breathing in and out, and it's very easy. It doesn't take any effort, and you can bring your attention there. And this can all happen by letting yourself getting lost in thought for a little while. Yes. I've read.
Okay, so
Yeah.
So, is the guidance for the recommendation to consciously continue that conversation and play it out, or do you just return to the adopted meditation?
Okay, and so you've also done more of a practice of stopping your thoughts and coming back to the breath?
Big time.
Big time, okay. All right. See, I still need to ask that question, otherwise it's harder to answer. So if you've been doing that practice, I would suggest you actually let the thinking go on more than you have before. Because your mind's been trained to actually interrupt it and stop it. And so let your thinking go on and see when it kind of reaches a point where you just are back in your body. You might find that the thinking just kind of drops away a bit, or you start to notice the thinking and your awareness of your body. This is one reason why I gave the instruction to be aware of your body rather than your breath. Because if you do a practice of being aware of your breath going in and out, one of the things about it is that it's moving, it's changing. And you have to work on, bring your attention back to the area where you're aware of the breath, locating it, and that awareness of breathing often is, you feel that thinking is a distraction. You can't, in a way, it's very hard to have thinking and awareness of breathing at the same time. There are only certain states of mind and periods where that would be quite possible for one. But with your body, it's not moving. It's just sitting there. The contact is, you're just aware of the pressure of, say, your hands on your legs or your body sitting still. And you can have the thoughts and awareness of the body pretty much simultaneously. So that's part of the shift in that instruction. You're welcome. It's a very good question. I say straight away jump into it. And one of the reasons for that, or the main reason is that, okay, Whether you should try to calm your mind, calm your body before really directing your attention to thinking. And what I would say is that, say, if when you calm your mind and then bring your attention to thinking, what's going to happen is you've already sort of slowed down your thinking, you've already managed it in a certain way that you're going to only be aware of a small fragment of a, or a particular, how do you say, more contained, controlled kind of thinking process. You might even find that if you do it that way, when you notice your thoughts, they might just vanish or they might not hold much, you know, which is many people's experience. But then you go outside of meditation and you're interacting with people in the world and you find you're just as reactive, you know. Your thoughts, your thinking is still coming up in the same way in situations. And part of that, I believe, is coming about because you're not actually learning how to observe your thinking in a more natural way as it actually occurs, or your feelings. Like you might find you can calm yourself down and be aware of a sensation of your of anxiety and find it's very manageable, but then you're in a situation and suddenly you're really anxious and it's not manageable anymore. So what I'm asking actually is or what I'm suggesting is a way in which you can learn to kind of tolerate ordinary levels of anxiety and thinking, ordinary types of thinking within your meditation sitting. So then you just start straight away with whatever it is you're thinking or feeling at the beginning of the sitting, and you go with that without trying to manage the experience.
It's okay to spend a minute or two in the body, not necessarily focus on the breath, but just your posture, kind of the muscle tension, you know, the tension in my shoulders, something like that. Trying to use the physical in that, but okay, and I'm going to lie.
Yes. This is getting down to a point where it's getting close to my putting out more rules. What I basically would say around that is you need to be able to bring your awareness to something to help you when you're sitting, that's fine. The difference, the main distinction I'm making here is whether you need to, in a sense, get yourself into a particular state of mind before you let things happen, which is a very common kind of vipassana orientation, is, you know, you need to get to a certain place before you actually allow your mind to go here or there. What I'm saying is you don't need to do that. Yes, Shubha? Not much. Yeah, just treat it as not much. Okay, there's no, I'm not trying to make this big division between meditation and the way your mind is outside of it. Instead, trying to be able to see your mind more as it is normally, you know, within a meditation, that you can let it go on, and that your intent is not to say in meditation sitting, your intent is not to analyze and come up with these new ideas and things about yourself necessarily, all right? But your intention is to get to know your mind, how your mind works, to get to kind of see things about what keeps it going, what keeps these kinds of thought processes going, whether it's a thought process around obsessing about something or worrying or trying to get an answer or make a decision about something. And so the intent is to look at your experience of thinking, and that enables us to actually let thinking go on, you know. But because we're, you know, it, The main difference between what's happening inside of meditation and outside of meditation is simply that we've adopted a meditation posture with the intention to meditate. You know, and really, that's enough. Any more starts to become an imposition. Then you start to try to dominate your experience and you're trying to control it much more. Yes?
Could you say that saying that you are observing your experience of that
Well, this is another side to it. See, observing, yes, your intention is to notice more, but when it comes to observing, what happens often with something around thinking, in particular emotions, is a sense that you need to separate a bit and become a witnesser or observer of the experience. What I'm saying is you don't need to separate. In fact, you can develop awareness without trying to create an observer, without creating distance. And to just keep this in mind, if you're not going to create distance from your thinking and from your feeling, you're in your thoughts and feelings. If you're in your thoughts and feelings, you're actually much more connected with that experience. You'll know it more intimately. The distancing tends to mean I need to manage it before I know it, instead of know it more as it is. Right, exactly. Yeah, whatever it is you're experiencing is just fine. That's what you're experiencing, even thinking. Right, we do. We're given, that's the thing, is that we're given messages around meditation that thinking is wrong, that or that we should have an empty mind, or that nothing good can come from thinking, or all sorts of things around it, instead of realizing that it has to be part of our experience, because we can't eliminate thinking. True. That's what's happening. Yes. Well, see, just like analyzing your experience, problem solving may be something that you do. It's the type of thinking that we're all engaged in. So just do it. Let yourself problem solve. And then when you start to reflect back on or look at some of the problem solving, you might understand a bit more how you do it. And if you have a solution in sitting and it's a good one, well, that's just fine. You know, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with it. That's the same thing with making lists. You know, we all may make lists around the future, do some future planning while we're sitting. You might come up with a very good list if you allow it to happen. And you might find also then, once you've finished your list, there may be no need for you to think about that anymore. And that's part of the nature of some of our thinking, is that once we feel like we've reached the point where we're sort of done, or the energy is drained out of it, it doesn't come back. Whereas if you keep stopping it before that point, you'll find there'll be a tendency to want to go back to it and for your mind to keep thinking about things. And that's where cutting your thoughts, I do believe, becomes counterproductive. As well as, you know, your mind gets sneaky and tries to have the thoughts in a whole other way, you know, and so things get really distorted then. Yes?
Yeah, I do think, and it's something I've been noticing in my practice in the last, say, couple of years, is that there's some real satisfaction in getting to that point of completion in the thought process. And that awareness is sort of going on with my welcoming in a more intuitive way of sitting with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And which I'm in the right place at the right time, it seems like. Because what you're talking about is just this intuitive quality to some degree. And, you know, just honoring that.
Right. That's, you know, when I was talking about rigidity beforehand, it becomes flexibility. You know, you find that you're a much more flexible meditator because you're, in a sense, noticing what you can do at any given time. You know, if you're thinking about something and you're planning, you know, what you're going to do afterwards, you know, to try to bring your attention to the breath is just going to create conflict and more tension. But to let yourself plan it out, you know, you might find, okay, I can go with this, I can see where, I can get a sense now a bit of how I do plan things, what I prefer, what I like, what kind of desires and intentions are there in my life. And you might find that that's actually a mirror, you know, it presents something about yourself. And so you start to pick up, you know, that you're not just thinking, you're also noticing something about thinking and about that there are things that go on in your thinking that really, when you become more aware of, you start to understand some of, you know, what you say, what you do, you know, more things about how you, you know, interact with others and do things in your life may start to become, an area that you see within your meditation sitting, and also outside in the world from that. Any other questions before we sit again? I'm ready for a sitting. What we'll do is the sittings are silent, just sit. Those of you who came late, I'm just going to say this. You know, you can sit in a comfortable posture, and if you need to move, you can. Just move slowly and quietly. You can sit with your eyes closed, and the main instruction I give is being aware of the touch of your hands or touch of your feet or on the cushion, and just being very gentle and kind to yourself during the sitting. And so we'll sit for about 40 minutes this time. What I'd like to do actually is just talk for a few minutes and then open this up for any questions or any reflections that you've had on the meditation sitting or things I've been saying. One thing about this approach to meditation that I should say a few things regarding is that it's one particular kind of meditation that you can really doubt, that you're actually free to truly question and consider for yourself. And to me, that's actually a big point around meditation practice, because often when we're given meditation instructions, we're given them in such a way as they're presented to us with a great amount of authority, that they shouldn't be doubted, they shouldn't be questioned. You essentially, if you do the instructions as stated, you will get what is promised, in a sense. There is more of a sense of having faith in the instruction and faith in the teacher at the outset, and going from there until it becomes confirmed within your experience, if it does become confirmed. With this kind of approach, it's actually a bit opposite, I really do believe that people need to be able to question what they receive as meditation practice, that you need to be able to see, is this practice or is this orientation actually, something that I agree with, that fits with me, or is it something that is not quite what it is I am looking for, or does it carry with it certain views or attitudes or things in it that I don't quite agree with, or is it a practice which in a sense meets more closely to my direction and what I do agree with. The importance of this is that I believe that many people come to practices like Vipassana and feel that they have, you know, beliefs and views and things around practice that when they're meditating, it's one way. When they're not meditating or in other environments, it's another way. And to really consider that if you can question and doubt in a meditation practice, you may find, or and even doubt in some of the teachings, that it activates some of your critical thinking. It gets you to reflect more on what you're being taught and also what your experience is. And that's an area that I'm really try to encourage people to do, so that in presenting this approach to meditation of allowing thinking, you know, many times people have said to me, well, that, that doesn't seem to be right, that's not what I've heard, that doesn't go along with what I know of meditation. So my response is, well, then it's a perfect practice to actually question, you know, because it actually has things in it which go against the common discourse, the common way of looking at meditation practice. If this sounded just like many of the other meditation practices you've heard, you might feel, well, it's the same. And it goes along with that discourse, and there's nothing to question here, nothing really to stir up my confusion about, well, what is meditation? Where does meditation practice lead? What is it about? But the way I see it is that actually when you have that stirred up inside of you, you're going to, in a sense, be looking, I would say, more seriously, more thoughtfully at this whole area of what is meditation and the meditation practices you've been doing and the experiences you've had. And I do see that there's a great value in that. So perhaps even in this last meditation sitting, you were having conversations with me about what I was saying, you were questioning, you know, a variety of things that I was talking about, that you had your own responses to things. So I'm perfectly willing to hear all of that. I think it's very useful. And that it's very useful to keep up some sense of interest in meditation itself. You know, that it just doesn't become something that's routine and dry, but becomes something that you are participating in. You're looking further into it and further into yourself in the same way. Because if we, in a sense, take it on in terms of there is just being an exercise or routine, then what happens, I believe, is that we feel we are doing it in a way of, you know, I say, complying. We're in a sense following the rules, following the instructions, instead of considering really what in this practice is part of my original intention to meditate. What is part of my whole direction in this? You know, and you might find that you have not just one, you know, original intention or purpose around meditation practice. You might have a few, and that they that maybe you've given preference to, say, a purpose of becoming calmer and less stressed, and have not given as much attention to meditation practice as being an area of self-knowledge or examining things about yourself that haven't been really looked into. And it's the second one of self-knowledge and examining what you haven't looked into, which I see is an important aspect of a practice that really includes awareness of thoughts and emotions. Because much of that area of our life, we may not have really been able to kind of look into it. We have, even in meditation practice, maybe just noticed when we get angry and have come back to the breath, or just notice the experience of anger and then let go of it, instead of understanding, well, what is anger? What am I calling anger here? You know, in this particular instance of it, is it hatred? Is it resentment? Is it contempt? Is it rage? What's going on here? And in my experience of it, what kinds of thoughts and intentions are actually fueling it and keeping it going? And what seems not to be doing that? And in this kind of approach around awareness of thinking, that's more of what may go on, that there may be more examination and exploration of your inner experience while you're meditating than in practices where you're actually encouraged not to do that and come back to the breath or come back to, another way of looking at your experience, such as labeling it. So I'm just going to stop here and open this up for any questions you might have. Yes.
I have a question. I'm contrast between what one experiences. So happy and great. And the 2 months have been emphasis put on the Kapha Dhamma and sort of the map of consciousness and meditative methodology, but not enough happening, unfolding. That's the comment. Observation, in the recollection meditation is that it's, I find very similar to when I had dreams and I'm trying to recall my dreams. In my experience, I'm doing it, I don't have so much case analytical thinking, but it's more, I think the term is logic, where I'm just getting a lot of images, patterns, not necessarily coherent, and I go with it in a few moments where awareness crystallizes. Sometimes I'm very definite, but there are moments where I sort of almost wake up. I guess the analogy is something like becoming lucid. Yeah, I just found that fascinating.
Yes, yes, I write about that in my book. You know, I have a whole section on that. I call it drifting off and waking up, which is part of this process is that actually by allowing your thoughts into the sitting more and allowing in awareness of your body, there's a tendency to drift. And you might have noticed this in your last sitting that there, you might have drifted and drift close to sleep. But it's not actually sleep. Because you're sitting up, you're meditating, you might not actually fall asleep, but you get close, and you may have then more fragmented thoughts, you know, thoughts that don't make sense, that don't complete themselves, visual imagery, little movie scenes, or lights, or colors. People may experience different things, and you may find that they actually can focus your attention and wake you up. And so that's more of the instruction I give in my book, is that instead of trying to stop those kinds of drifting states, to actually let them go on and let the lights and colors and whatever else starts to come up, even some of the thoughts, draw your attention, and then you might find that you actually skirt sleep and you come back up into another kind of state. That's, yeah, that's very fascinating. Good. Yes.
In the beginning, I was very busy for me to work into implementing and having dialogue with people. And then, after a certain point, I began to feel like, going to a very that I had this painful sensation in my chest. And so,
okay.
The question is, what can I do this meditation myself, but if I go to any other workshop and I'm certainly listening to the kind of instructions that you're given in mindfulness meditation, it's a question for me about what you're doing.
Okay. Well, I'm going to try to answer a question from another angle. because you said that you had this anxiety, this or this feeling in your chest, and the things going on in your life, and then you visualized golden light, and I gather that calmed you, that settled your mind for a bit, and then you felt better, and then you went back into the anxiety? Okay. Now, doing that kind of process of calming and then going back into something like the anxiety, calming again, going back to anxiety, will actually help you develop greater tolerance for the anxiety. You know, so I don't see any problem with that. You know, that's actually not a bad direction. But if we go in a direction of just trying to get calm and getting, you know, ourselves away from any anxiety or any other emotion and trying to stay there, then we're not developing tolerance for those kinds of feelings. We're not going to get into an ability to actually accept those feelings. What I would say about that then is that you found that on your own. So that is far more important than anything I or another teacher can really tell you about how to meditate. That's where I would place the value. Well, I mean, I would usually save that for the end of the day. Okay, so if that's okay, so stay till 5, and I'll talk about it, yes. Well, that's it. And that's part of what I'm saying around trusting your own inner process. Again, that you actually stayed with the anxiety long enough in the sitting. You sat with it and you seemed like you weren't trying to get rid of it or do anything, but you were actually even interested in a way. And so there was a shift that occurred within your own process. And so I would just say trust that. There's no sense of, well, what's the correct way or correct process. It's almost what's going to happen is we're going to get to know how we go through different things. So you might find that this may be one way that you actually can trust yourself going through anxiety without needing to try to control it or manage it or breathe into it or do anything like that. That you can kind of see something else about that process. Yes. Yes. Okay. So if you didn't hear her question, essentially it was around PTSD and coming to meditation with the original intent to really be more grounded, more in the body, and not to, in a sense, go into a lot of the thoughts that are associated with the trauma or anxiety and things like that, right? Okay. The thing I would put out around that and around meditation practice is that if you've been meditating for a period of time and you've actually found that you can be with the breath and that you can get calm and that you can trust that, then you basically know that, okay, there is a way that I can find some kind of safety and some comfort within my sitting. But also knowing that doing that may not actually have kind of addressed some of the things that keep the anxious thoughts going or keep the anxiety alive in some way. So this would just be a foray into kind of seeing more into some things around the what keeps the anxiety going and what triggers it. And so the thing about it is that you can go only as far as you're comfortable going. This is not like one of those approaches where you try to quickly get to the heart of something or push yourself. Instead, you just wait and you just see, well, how will things develop as I sit with it? You know that you have anxiety. Anxiety comes up in certain situations. I will learn how to relate to it. I will see how this goes. And you may find that sometimes it gets overwhelming. And whenever something gets overwhelming, you'll probably feel attacked by it or, you know, under some kind of threat by it. And if that's the case, you're not going to really become interested in it. You're not going to want to develop real acceptance. You really want to going to get rid of it. And that's a natural response to it. So when you know you're overwhelmed, you may need to calm yourself down. But, you know, what's the line? What's the limit that you've created around that, or the area around that? And you might find that you can actually tolerate a bit more than you thought you could months ago or years ago. And so you find, I can sit with a little bit more anxiety than I could before. Or I can sit with a little bit more obsession than I could before, and see where that goes. And trust in the practice you've done. Trust in what you've developed. And that you can bring yourself back to your body. Or your breath. You know, there is this kind of myth that if we let certain thoughts and feelings run on, that they're just going to, like, turn into a wildfire. You know, they're just going to, you know, continue to be fanned by something. I don't really believe that's the case. I believe what's going to happen much of the time is that you'll reach a point of intensity and it will start to dissipate. Or you'll reach a place where you just don't no longer engage it in the same way. And to trust that more. To trust that your mind has its own way of not kind of getting completely, not going to where you're terrified it will go. Now along those lines, I would also say is in meditation with our minds is also to respect our fear. That if we're really afraid of something, not to say I should just be brave and I should just go through it, but to honor the fear and stay with your experience of fear. It's the most sensible thing to do, because to try to push yourself beyond your fear, you might find you're pushing yourself into areas that you're really not ready for. And I can tell you from, you know, over 20 years of teaching in this way, what I have seen with people is that they don't push themselves into places that are truly dangerous, because there's no pushing. If you're really kind of gentle and allowing and just letting things develop, you find that you have patience with yourself, that you will get to some of the things about yourself that you know are deeply rooted, that are very destabilizing when they come up and at the wrong time, you know. And you'll be able to sit with them and to get to know those experiences. But it's not going to be something that you're kind of going to try to get to. It just comes of its own. Yes.
The kind of mind that you
Mm-hmm.
before you get to this one? Is that the learning meditation before you get to the unlearning meditation? When you have it, or do you just trust somebody's intrinsic wisdom?
Well,
right from this right from the beginning. I guess my question, how do you begin something with nothing happening?
Actually, it's easier in many respects. Yes, I do trust, people's minds. I'll say, a few things about that is, first of all, most of the people coming to meditation practice are, good people and ethical and pretty much together. And so I don't see a major threat in beginning with being aware of thoughts and feelings and letting minds go on, or letting thoughts go on. And also the instruction around being gentle and kind to yourself goes a long way in helping somebody actually get engaged in a process where they're relating to their inner experience differently. Whereas if, to me, instructions like, bring your attention back to your breath and if your mind wanders actually can create stress and pressure in certain people. And can also, if you add to that some kind of sense of striving, which many people take in terms of something which I believe is much more aggressive, that also adds something into the mix where people at the beginning may feel, in those practices, may feel like they're on task, that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, but behind the scenes there may actually be much more aggression and self-criticism and pressure that's developing within the meditation practice. So someone beginning this meditation practice, actually because they don't have a task, they have nowhere particular to go, may actually start with less of some of the elements which I believe will make it much more likely for somebody to have mental difficulties meditating. So I've been on many long retreats, I've seen quite a few meditators over the years, and I've worked with people who've done, intensive practices and have had to unlearn some of the things in those practices because they were adding to a kind of mental disturbance for them. I don't know if that answers your question. Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. That's fair. Yes. And if you notice, too, in the beginning instruction I gave, it's, there is awareness of your body, external contact, touch, and using that as a base in order for you to be able to sit with thoughts and feelings. Because if you don't have that counter, that kind of base in the body, it's going to be, I think, harder for somebody to start to develop the capacity to look at thoughts and feelings as they're going on. It will be much more like ruminating, much more like getting truly caught up. So there is a development there of awareness of the body. There's also awareness of the feeling tone of, pleasant, unpleasant, and neither pleasant nor unpleasant. And, of course, when people start to study the Dharma and look into the Dharma, the fourth foundation around looking into mental phenomena becomes a part of it. Right. Well, that's the thing, and my belief is that if you just stay with the breath in the body, it's going to be hard to shift to be able to look at thoughts and emotions in the long run. And that, the traditional training is basically, the belief is if you stay with the first foundation on the body, the other foundations will just come in from that angle. But I don't see that really happening for people. For the most part, many people just stay wedded to a body awareness practice. Yes. Okay, well. You know, that was something I'm going to talk about this afternoon, the whole function of rules. But I'll just say briefly, we will create rules no matter what. So even if I don't present any, you will have some from doing this.
Rules will arise.
Rules will arise, yes. Emotions, right, exactly. And that's why I'm making that distinction. Thank you for clarifying that, because the translations from Pali have often been such that, you know, there's a confusion with people between feelings, sensations, and emotions. And the reason I use emotions is because emotions are very close to what is being talked about in the third foundation of mindfulness around thoughts. You know, that desire, you know, hatred, those are emotions, you know, so we really need to kind of look at it from that angle. You're welcome. Yes, Andy?
I just want to say that it's refreshing that you're not so concerned that the exceptional thinking is going to hijack the meditation.
Yes, I've worked with people who have had OCD and have, you know, really severe obsessional thinking doing this, in their lives. And doing this kind of practice has actually been easy for them when they're told not to try to focus, you know. And so, it actually works. Even people with attention deficit, if this approach will work very well, because you're not trying to get somebody to develop a very unnatural attention on a single object. You're letting their natural attention go from thing to thing, and so people can actually sit for much longer without difficulty. Yes, Shubha? That's a harder question for me because, it's a very good question. I did develop this approach over the years, so really it's my own kind of work. When I was a monk in Sri Lanka, there was much more, of course, discourse around meditation practice and many, there wasn't just one way of meditating or one form of vipassana. So what has happened, of course, with meditation practices coming from the East into the West is, particular ones that were noted as vipassana or took that name, you know, like the Burmese method, Mahasi Sayadaw, that came into the West, and then it became Westernized, you know. So even though I was trained in the Mahasi method, you know, I looked at it from being in the East and from working with students and seeing that it was missing a lot of what was going on in people's experience. That was my main initial critique of it, is that to me, when a teacher asked just a few questions about my meditation sitting and would only cover maybe 1% of what was going on and then I would get an instruction regarding that 1%. It didn't make sense. But when I was teaching myself or teaching other students in the East, and when I started in the States, asking more questions, getting much more of a sense of what's going on in people's sittings, then any kind of dialogue around meditation practice, any possible instruction I could give, was based on a person's review of their experience and a real knowledge of it. And when I was trained in Sri Lanka, there was actually much more emphasis on knowing what you were experiencing in your sittings as well, you know, rather than, going through a sitting and just trying to have a particular experience and then move on. One last question before lunch, yes. Yes, I mean, it's a more technical question. I think I'd rather wait until later today to address that, okay, because it's going to be more involved.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.